This is a recording of the open meeting of the Federal Election Commission scheduled for Thursday, March 23rd. Should you have questions after listening to this recording, please call the FEC at 800-424-9530 or email us at info@fec.gov.
Good morning. The Federal Election Commission open meeting for Thursday, March 23rd, 2006 will come to order. I'd like to reiterate an announcement we made yesterday, which is that the Commission is carrying over consideration of the Internet rules until next Monday at 10 a.m., so we will take up the Internet at that time. First item on our agenda for this morning is correction and approval of the minutes. Mr. Vice Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd like to move for the consideration and approval of the minutes for March 16, 2006, as set forth in Agenda Document 06-19.
Vice Chairman, so moved. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed? Motion passes by a vote of 6-0. Second item on our agenda this morning, Draft Advisory Opinion 2006-3 involving Whirlpool Corporation Political Action Committee. And for the Office of General Counsel, we have Mr. Albert Kiss. Mr. Kiss, good morning.
Good morning. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Whirlpool Corporation is the connected organization of Whirlpool Corporation Political Action Committee, an SSF. Whirlpool maintains a government relations website that's accessible by its current employees. Whirlpool proposes to add a link to its intranet government relations website to provide access to a new password-protected SSF website. By entering a common username and password at an authorization screen, members of Whirlpool's solicitable class that are employees would be granted access to the new SSF website. The SSF website will contain information about Whirlpool's PAC, including but not limited to a list of board members, goals, PAC contribution criteria, and a payroll deduction authorization form. Whirlpool asks whether its solicitable class employees may be granted access to this new password-protected website through one common username and password. The draft concludes that the use of one common username and password by solicitable class employees is permissible because access to the password-restricted website would be limited to persons who know that one common username or password, that is, the SSF's restricted class. We're available to respond to any questions. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Kiss. Discussion on the draft. Commissioner Weintraub.
I move approval, Mr. Chairman.
Commissioner Weintraub has moved approval of agenda document number 06-18. Discussion on the commissioner's motion. Hearing none, I'll call the question. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed? Commissioner's motion passes by a vote of 6-0. Thank you, Mr. Kiss. Mr. Costa, any routine administrative matters to bring to our attention?
There are no matters, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. With that, then, we will recess this meeting until Monday at 10 a.m., at which time we'll take up Internet regulations. Thank you. Good morning. The continuation of the Federal Election Commission's open meeting of Thursday, March 23rd, 2006 will come to order. And today we have one item of business. That's final rules and explanation and justification for Internet communications. I'll offer just a few brief remarks, and I know a number of my colleagues also have some opening thoughts they'd like to present before we turn to the materials before us today. I am very pleased that it appears we have a consensus today and will establish several important protections for online political speech. This has been a very difficult rulemaking on multiple levels. However, if the Commission adopts the proposed final rules before today, I think a number of positive things will have been achieved. First, the proposed rules exempt individuals who engage in political activity on the Internet from the restrictions of the campaign finance laws. The exemption for individual Internet activity in the final rules is categorical and unqualified. Individual online political activity will be protected from FEC regulation, regardless of whether the individual acts alone or as part of a group, and regardless of whether the individual acts in coordination with a candidate or acts independently. The exemption applies no matter who owns the computer equipment the individual uses and no matter where the Internet activities are performed. The final rules thus avoid disparate treatment of individuals who may not be able to afford to purchase their own computer and explicitly protect individuals who may borrow a computer from a friend, neighbor, family member, or anyone else to do political activity. The exemption in the final rules protects Internet activities by individuals in all forms, including emailing, linking, blogging, hosting a website. And importantly, the exemption encompasses a wide variety of Internet equipment and services, including computer hardware, software, ISP services, and Internet domain names. The exemption also includes any other technology that is used to provide access to or use of the Internet to ensure that future innovations in computer equipment and technology remain protected under the final rules. And an individual or group of individuals can spend whatever money they wish on their Internet activities at the grassroots level without any of these expenditures being considered a contribution to the candidate or candidates that they support, even if the activities are done in direct consultation with the candidate or the candidate's campaign staff. In all these respects, the final rules recognize that the online political speech of individuals should not be restricted by the FEC in any way, and I strongly support this result. Second, the proposed rules before the Commission today would broadly extend the media exemption to the Internet. In so doing, the Commission recognizes the media exemption should apply with full force to news stories, commentaries, and editorials that appear online, and that the media exemption fully protects entities that have no offline component and conduct all of their activities online, entities such as the Drudge Report and Salon.com. If the final rules are adopted, the Commission will also make clear that bloggers are entitled to the same media exemption as traditional media entities such as CBS, CNN, and the New York Times. In this respect, if the Commission adopts the rules before today, there will be no second-class citizens among members of the media, and Internet journalists will be entitled to the same broad press exemption that their traditional media counterparts have enjoyed for decades. Third, the proposed final rules would significantly broaden the ability of corporate employees and union members to use their work computers to volunteer for the candidates of their choice. The Commission's existing regulations contain a safe harbor which indicates that corporate employees and union members may use their work facilities for campaign purposes up to 1 hour per week and 4 hours per month. Although this regulation is styled as a safe harbor, it has widely been interpreted as setting a limit on the amount of permissible campaign activity that people can do through the facilities of their office. The vast majority of comments we received in this rulemaking, including comments from several reform organizations, urged the Commission to abolish any time restriction on the use of corporate and union computers for volunteer political activities. The final rules that adopted today would permit rank-and-file corporate employees and union members to use work-issued PCs, laptops, and other Internet equipment on a broad basis for political activities, provided the employee volunteers on his or her own time and does not increase the overhead costs of the corporation or the labor union. And in my view, if the final rules are adopted, the Commission will take an important step in protecting the online political activities of rank-and-file employees across the country. I look forward to the Commission's consideration of the final rules. In closing, I want to personally thank everyone at this agency who has worked so hard to get us here today. It has truly been a remarkable process over the last year. All the people involved are too numerous to mention and thank personally, but I would like to specifically thank Richard Yule, Rosie Smith, and Brad Deutsch of the General Counsel's Office for their outstanding work in this rulemaking. I also would like to personally thank Melissa Lorenza and Stephanie Danis from my office for their outstanding work and for keeping me sane during this process. With that, I will turn the floor over to my colleagues. I understand a number of them have some opening remarks they'd like to give, and I'll turn first to Commissioner Weintraub. Commissioner.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. First of all, we have a distinguished visitor in the audience, and I'd like to welcome my friend, Branko Petric, the president of the Election Commission of Bosnia-Herzegovina, who is visiting with us for a few days, and I'm looking forward to a productive sharing of information. Next, I want to echo some of what the chairman said. I want to personally thank all of the staff who worked so tirelessly on this rulemaking. You all have no idea. Richard Ewell, Rosie Smith, Brad Deutsch, Issa Sfera, Amy Rothstein, Larry Norton, you all really went above and beyond on this one. And I also want to thank your families for putting up with all the late nights and weekend work. I can't begin to say how many times I called or emailed at some ridiculous hour, and there was always someone there to answer. And I want to thank my colleagues, all of whom participated in this process, but especially Chairman Toner. The chairman and I serve on the Regulations Committee, and we really were in the trenches with the staff on this rulemaking. Your assistant, Melissa Lorenza, and mine, Rebecca Harvey, also worked ceaselessly on this project, and I want to thank them as well. This draft represents a consensus. Probably each of us would have written various sections differently if we were writing it on our own, but overall I think it represents an appropriate balancing of the concerns of all the stakeholders in this process. A lot of work and a lot of time went into this draft, and I feel pretty good about the result. I think it's a win-win-win. As I think everyone knows, no one at the FEC woke up one morning and decided that this would be a good day to regulate the Internet. Congress wrote a campaign finance law restricting how one could pay for certain public communications, including any form of general public political advertising. The Commission issued a regulation in 2002 defining that term so as to exempt anything transmitted over the Internet, but a federal judge struck it down. The court said general public political advertising must include some communications over the Internet, and the court ordered us to amend our definition accordingly. I think in this draft we adopt the most natural reading of the words general public political advertising, construing them to include paid advertisements placed on other persons' websites. And that is all we're regulating on the Internet. If someone chooses to challenge this regulation in court again, and I hope they don't, I think we have a common sense, well-justified, and eminently defensible position. So if we adopt this regulation, we will have complied with the court's order. And that's one win. Secondly, as we look to the concerns of the stakeholders in this process, I think we have addressed the largest concern of the campaign finance reform community. And in so doing, we are regulating only that aspect of Internet communications that most commenters agreed either already was regulated or should be. The reformers said that they were afraid that the 2002 rule left the door open for corporations and labor unions to spend large sums on campaign advertisements placed on the web. Now, others argued that that was already banned by Section 441B of the law, and I agree with that position, but we will, by adopting this regulation, confirm that. So we've responded to the reformers, and that's two wins. Finally, with this regulation, we affirm the right of bloggers to blog, of online media to avail themselves of the media exemption, and of individuals to use whatever computer resources are available to them to communicate about politics. Email as much as you want. No one has to worry about disclaimers on email except for political committees. So that's a win for everyone who wants to foster freewheeling online political debate. This may be the most deregulatory regulation this agency has adopted since I've been here. And that's appropriate, because the Internet really is a special case in politics. We have yet to begin to tap its potential, and this agency should not get in its way. Mr. Chairman, I most sincerely thank you, and at the appropriate time, I will be delighted to move approval of this document.
Thank you, Commissioner Weintraub. Commissioner Mason.
Thank you. Well, first of all, I share my colleagues' deep and genuine appreciation to the staff and to my colleagues for working on the rule, but I'm not happy. And I'm not happy not because of anything the staff did or didn't do, because I think they performed ably and well under the circumstances, but I'm not happy because we're in the situation we're in. And just to start off, because we didn't appeal the single judge's ruling that put us in this situation. Now, several of my colleagues weren't here when that decision was made, but it's clear that the commission itself is in part at fault in not taking that ruling further, because I think we had a reasonable basis for that, and so it's not exactly a position where we can say our hands were completely tied. I had been reluctant to impose federal election campaign rules on the Internet, first because I don't think there were any abuses shown. And I thought we should have waited until we saw what the problem was we were trying to stop before imposing a rule to try to stop it. Second, because technological advances and changes in practice continue to occur very frequently in the context of the Internet. In 2002, just 4 short years ago, the Commission undertook an inquiry on the Internet, and blogs were unheard of. And yet, in this past rule, blogs were almost the complete focus of everything we did. And I'm willing to predict that 4 years from now, it'll be something else. Now, in the rule, we have attempted, as best we can foresee, to be technology neutral, to be practice neutral, and forum neutral. We won't know until 4 or 5 years from now whether we were successful in that effort, but we have tried. So we've tried to deal with that. But those frequent changes have made me reluctant to impose rules. Most of all, I'm unhappy because we have 2 documents before us that total 107 pages. And it simply confirmed my impression that once we started down the road to regulating in this area, it was going to be complex. Now, it's complex for valid reasons. We could have complied with the court ruling with a rulemaking focused specifically on what constituted a general public political advertisement in the context of the Internet. And we could have done that in maybe 20 pages. The problem is we realized once we started going down that road, we needed to build in some additional protections to make sure that people weren't caught up, didn't think they were going to be caught up, and so we added many other provisions, all of which I'm supportive of, at least as far as they go. Some, I suppose, could have gone further, but it is simply the problem that a lot of critics of this regulation have pointed out, that once regulation begins, it takes on a logic of its own, and I'm afraid over time this is going to get more complex, not more simple. And so I think it is a sad day. I think in the context of what we found ourselves having to do, this is a worthwhile effort, and I do appreciate the staff and my colleagues for engaging in it, but I think it is unfortunate.
Thank you. Vice Chairman Lenhart.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd like to begin by expressing appreciation and acknowledging the great efforts that you and Commissioner Weintraub put into this. I know the amount of effort that went into this. I know that all of the commissioners at this table participated. There are words and concepts in here that I can recognize as coming from everyone up here, but I think that you and Commissioner Weintraub put an enormous amount of effort and are responsible for coming together with a document that I think is enormously successful. I also would like to acknowledge the staff, as Commissioner Weintraub noted. Many long nights, many weekends were spent trying to make this as comprehensible, clear a document as possible, and one that would garner the support of the Commission, and I want to appreciate the work that the people, especially those up here today, put into that effort. There are several principles that have guided my thinking in this rulemaking and that form the basis for my support of this rule today. First, as in all of our rulemakings, we begin by trying to ensure that we have fairly and faithfully implemented the statute that Congress has given us. As Senators McCain and Feingold have long made clear, BCRA was never intended to regulate private citizens communicating on the Internet, and I believe that we've achieved that goal today. Second, I think that it's essential that we provide clear rules that are as easy to understand as possible so that individuals who are seeking to comply with the law can grasp what the law permits and what it prohibits. I believe that we've achieved that goal as well. Finally, I think we should, to the degree possible, try to ensure that our rules place as few burdens as possible on the ability of individuals to participate actively in the political process. All too often, we speak of citizens not actively engaged in the democratic process. We see it in the relatively small number of eligible voters who actually register and vote. We see it in the relatively small percentage of citizens who contribute to candidates and political parties. And this agency especially sees it in the small number of taxpayers who choose to allocate $3 of their tax payments to the presidential matching fund system. The Internet provides a very positive counterpoint to these trends. This is an area where citizens are actively engaged in robust political discussion. It is an area where individuals act as if politics matters, as if politics is personal. This rule has placed as few regulatory burdens as possible on this positive addition to the political discourse in this nation. As a consequence, I intend to vote in favor of adopting the rule today. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Vice Chairman. Commissioner Von Spakovsky.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would echo my colleagues in thanking the OGC. I think I was getting emails at 9 o'clock on Saturday night, which I think is unusual when we're normally working on these matters. And I would like to thank my colleagues on the Commission also, because there's been a lot of back and forth and compromise trying to work this out. However, I have to say I very much share the concerns of Commissioner Mason. I do intend to vote for this, assuming there are no unforeseen amendments from the table, but I do so only very reluctantly and only to comply with the court's order. On the one hand, this revision is limited. It only extends regulation to advertisements placed for a fee on another person's website. And from that standpoint, it adequately responds to the court order. However, I'm still convinced that Congress did not intend BCRA to apply to the Internet. The definition of public communications, which was amended in Section 431, includes an exhaustive list of media types, and it does not include the Internet. I have a hard time believing that Congress would list every conceivable form of the media and then specifically omit the Internet, but then say that it should be included in the generic phrase general public political advertising. Unfortunately, the district court disagreed. The commission, prior to my appointment to the commission, did not appeal, so now we're forced to act. I'm voting for this because of the various provisions that the chairman mentioned that were also changed. The provisions on the disclaimer, the provisions on exceptions to the definition of contributions and expenditures for Internet activity. I think that one is extremely important because it's a broad exemption that makes it clear that we have no intention of regulating grassroots activity on the Internet. And I want to point out, because this is often used to justify campaign finance regulations, voluntary individual activity on the Internet, which is conducted at almost no cost, poses absolutely no threat of corruption of the campaign and election process. In fact, this is the kind of activity we should be encouraging in our political culture. The media exemption is very important. It makes it clear that news stories, commentaries, and opinions, which are carried on websites and the Internet, are not going to be covered, and that's certainly how I intend to enforce this new regulation. I think the changes we made to the use of corporate and labor organization facilities, particularly the Internet, simply recognizes the reality of the workplace today, which is that everyone here who has a laptop or a cell phone or a BlackBerry issued by their employer doesn't just use it for work-related activities. And this recognizes that as long as it's within the policy of the company, it doesn't increase the costs of the company, and there's no coercion involved in the political activity. There was a journalist in New York named A.J. Liebling in the 1940s and 50s who once said that freedom of the press is guaranteed to those who own one. And through the Internet, ordinary citizens now own a printing press. And I think we don't need government regulation limiting that opportunity. Let me end this on. We've been talking about a regulation that, as Commissioner Mason points out, is now 107 pages. But I'd like to end kind of on a philosophical note about this whole issue, if I may. I'm used to that. My father taught philosophy for 60 years as a professor, and all the discussions at the dinner table always ended up on a philosophical note. What I find most remarkable about this is the Internet represents probably the greatest advance in communications technology in history. And yet, what's ironic to me is that it's restoring a remarkable feature of our political culture from the early days of our republic. During America's founding era, political views and opinions on candidates and issues of the day were often expressed in letters written by individuals, which were then copied and circulated throughout the 13 colonies. One of the most influential of these started off as a pamphlet from a very obscure Philadelphian named Thomas Paine. That letter helped influence our revolution. Later, the letters of Alexander Hamilton, James Madison, and John Jay, which became known as the Federalist Papers, generated the popular support necessary to pass our Constitution. This ability of individuals basically disappeared as our country became larger, our size increased, and newspapers went from one-man print operations to very large and expensive undertakings. TV and broadcast stations simply magnified that. The Internet has restored the ability of individual letter writers, ordinary citizens with cogent ideas, to now have a greatly expansive reach once again. I think the arrival of the Internet, in fact, makes it possible for anyone to be sitting at their home computer a Thomas Paine or a James Madison, and I think it's one of the most positive developments we've had in over 200 years. Congress needs to ensure that this continues, and despite the fact that we will be adopting what I think is a pretty good regulation today, I urge Congress to act, to pass the Hensarling Bill, H.R. 1606, to overturn the court decision and to basically ratify the prior regulation issued by the FEC.
Thank you, Commissioner Von Spakovsky. Would anyone else like to offer an opening statement? Commissioner Wolf.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. I'd like to begin once again by thanking the people in the Office of General Counsel, Larry Norton, Rosemary Smith, and Brad Deutsch, Richard Ewell, Isis Farah. We've gotten to know them much better through this process than we have in other processes, as you might expect. And they have given us their hard work and professional advice, and most especially their patience in their ultimately successful effort to coalesce our respective and sometimes quite divergent views into a single document we can all support. And their work has been really superlative in all respects. I'd also like to thank the commissioners for the collegial approach each has taken in working on this matter and working through the sometimes very difficult issues that are represented here. We all recognize that it is important to the public and the regulated community, and we've worked very hard to find a consensus on all important points, and we have done so. While we have differing views on some aspects of the ruling, we have agreed on a very workable consensus document that I think we're all comfortable joining, notwithstanding some of the discomfort that exists surrounding this process. We are faced with a very special challenge because of the unique nature of this rulemaking. It has been unique and difficult because we've been dealing with two very moving targets, technology and usage. We are all are changing rapidly, and not all of their consequences and directions are easy to divine, but we have done our best to do so in this circumstance. We've also been placed in a virtual legal vacuum, and in that vacuum we've been required to reconcile the overall intent of BCRA, the ruling of the Shays Court, as well as our own philosophies into a responsible, workable document, and I believe we have accomplished that goal. Luckily, we are all philosophically aligned in the most important aspect of this rulemaking. We believe the FEC should take a hands-off approach to the maximum extent possible and reasonable under the law and court rulings. We recognize the Internet is perhaps the most leveling in many years in terms of providing equality in the public and providing equality in the public political debate, some say since the Gutenberg press. Certainly this is so, and our rulemaking today makes clear that within the confines of the law, we intend to keep it that way. We must keep a watchful eye on our rules in view of the rapidly changing events, technology, and usage, and be willing to return to these issues whenever necessary to tweak our rulings today to make sure the objectives we pronounce today will continue to be achieved in the future. It has been a great pleasure working with the commissioners on this issue. I'm new to the commission. I didn't know what to expect when I got here, but I found an extraordinarily competent collegial group, and it's been a great pleasure to be a part of that group, especially in this rulemaking here today.
Thank you, Commissioner Walther. With opening statements now completed, why don't we turn to the documents before us. Mr. Vice Chairman, we have some late-submitted documents.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd like to move for the suspension of the rules for the timely submission of documents to consider agenda documents 06-20 and 06-20A.
Vice Chairman, so moved. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed. Motion passes by a vote of 6-0. And from the Office of General Counsel this morning, we have Mr. Richard Ewell and Ms. Rosemary Smith.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Mr.
Ordinarily, I provide an overview of the draft before you, and I'm not sure it'll be is it your pleasure that I do that again today. Or
any remarks that you wish to make are always welcome.
Okay.
Whatever you would like to do, Mr.
Well, then I will go ahead and provide the normal overview of the document. I'm sorry if any of this is a little bit repetitive. You have before you Agenda Document 620, which is a draft of the final rules and explanation and justification for the Internet communications. The draft addresses a number of issues related to the Internet. The first is the definition of public communication. As you know, Congress defined the term public communication in BCRA as a communication by means of any broadcast, cable, or satellite communication, newspaper, magazine, outdoor advertising facility, mass mailing, or telephone bank to the general public, as well as any other form of general public political advertising. In 2002, the commission defined the public communication and did so tracking the statutory language with the additional statement that the internet communications would be excluded. In Shades versus the FEC, the D.C. District Court concluded that at least some forms of internet communications are public communications and required the commission to revise its definition of public communication to determine which forms of internet communications should be included in that definition. The draft before you makes clear that the term public communication, as defined in 100.26, includes only one form of internet communication, communications placed for a fee on another person's website. Under this definition, paying to place an advertisement on an online newspaper is a public communication, but the content that you post on your own website is not. Email communications are excluded from the definition of public communication as well. This change to the definition of public communication has a ripple effect in the Commission's regulations because several regulatory provisions include the term public communication. Most of these provisions are focused on state, district, or local party committees or state or local candidates, and very few affect individuals. First, in 2002, the Commission defined the term generic campaign activity in terms of a public communication. That's at 11 CFR 100.25. The Shays District Court concluded the Commission had not satisfied all the notice requirements under the Administrative Procedure Act with respect to that definition, but otherwise indicated that the definition was permissible. The draft before you therefore includes a definition of generic campaign activity that has now been fully noticed in compliance with the APA. The definition is identical to the previous definition, incorporating the revised definition of public communication. The term public communication is also used in the definition of agent of a state or local candidate, in the allocation requirements for certain separate segregated funds and non-connected political committees, and in the provisions defining coordinated communications and party coordinated communications, and as well as in the disclaimer requirements. The draft notes that the revised definition of public communication will be incorporated in reference by reference into each of those regulations. But with the exception of the disclaimer requirements, the draft does not propose any changes to the regulations themselves. Regarding the disclaimer requirements, only political committees will be required to include disclaimer statements on their email communications, and then only when they send more than 500 substantially similar email communications. Political committees must also continue to include disclaimer statements on their websites, but individuals and others will not be required to include disclaimer statements on any email communications or websites. In addition to the regulations defining public communication, the draft, as you noted, includes exceptions to the definition of contribution and expenditure for individual activities and activities performed by groups of individuals, as well as revisions to the media exemption and the regulations governing the use of corporate and labor organization facilities. The draft includes two new exceptions that apply to individuals and groups of individuals. I think you've gone over the highlights of those. I think the exceptions apply regardless of whether the individuals engage in internet activities on their own computers or on computers owned by others. The exceptions also apply regardless to whether you're performing the activity as a volunteer for a campaign, totally independently from the campaign, in coordination with the campaign, or in any other form. The exceptions are framed broadly enough to ensure that individuals' time, special skills, and computer equipment and services are all accepted from the definition of contribution or expenditure when they're performing internet activities. In light of the concerns of commenters who noted that some bloggers engage in activities as groups of individuals or as incorporated entities, there's also a specific provision that makes it clear that both groups of individuals and incorporated bloggers may avail themselves of these new exceptions. The draft also makes clear that individuals will not make a contribution or expenditure by republishing campaign materials on the internet so long as they do not pay for a public communication to do so. The draft revisions related to the media exemptions revises those in two ways, really. Well, one overall way. The draft makes it clear that the media exemption protects news stories, commentaries, and editorials, no matter in what medium they are published. Bloggers and other online publishers can qualify for the media exemption through the same test applied to offline publishers. Finally, the draft includes revisions to the Commission's regulations that govern the use of corporate and labor organization facilities. The regulations have included a longstanding provision allowing for the occasional, isolated, or incidental use of corporate and labor organization facilities for political activities. The revision creates safe harbors permitting employees and others to use computers and other equipment for Internet activities both at work and away from work, as long as they do so on their own time. The Commission is not quantifying a permissible level of use of corporate or labor organization facilities for Internet activities, but the rules reiterate that corporations and unions are prohibited from coercing employees to participate in political activities. Additionally, a corporation may not condition the availability of its space and computers on being used for political activity or support for opposition to any other candidate or political party. That concludes the overall remarks. I would just note, as you have noted, that we have the additional suggested amendments in Agenda Document 620A, and it includes the explanation and justification for the regulations relating to the use of corporate and labor organization facilities. And in addition, if the Commission does approve the final rules, we ask that the approval also contain the authority for our office to make any additional technical and conforming changes that may be necessary. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Yule. Discussion of the proposed final rules and the documents before us. Commissioner Von Spakovsky.
Just before we take our vote, Mr. Chair, I just want to point out one thing, and that is that the, we have changed the disclaimer requirements to apply to certain kinds of Internet communications. The ENJ does not address the issue of exactly what disclaimer is required on those. And I would like to point out that my interpretation is I don't read the statute or the regulations as applying the media-specific requirements of the statute or the regs to the disclaimers. In other words, for example, the box, font size, color disclaimer requirements for print ads, I don't believe they apply to the Internet. The standby your ad requirements for radio and TV, I don't believe apply to the Internet. The only disclaimer requirements I think that do apply are the general content requirements and the clear and conspicuous requirements of Section 110.11. Thank you.
Thank you. Other discussion of the documents? Commissioner Weintraub.
Mr. Chairman, I just want to point out that while it is, there are a lot of pages here in front of us today, only about 10 pages are the actual regulations, and all the rest, to quote Hillel, is commentary, which we are required to include because the courts require an extensive explanation and justification. Otherwise, they have this nasty habit of striking down our regulations, and we don't want that to happen. However, for the benefit of those who don't really want to read all 107 pages, the Vice Chairman and I have prepared a handy two-page summary, which is available on both of our web pages, as well as their hard copies out in the hallway. And with that act of shameless self-promotion, Mr. Chairman, I move approval of Agenda Document 06-20 and 06-20A, and also move to authorize the General Counsel's Office to make any technical and conforming amendments that are necessary.
Commissioner Weintraub has moved approval of Agenda Document Number 0620 and 0620A and has authorized the Office of General Counsel to make any technical and conforming corrections that may be necessary. Discussion on Commissioner Weintraub's motion to approve. Hearing none, I'll call the question. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed? Motion passes by a vote of all six commissioners present, and the rules are adopted. That concludes our business for today with our completion of the Internet rulemaking. That is the eighth rulemaking as required by the Shays litigation. We have one remaining regarding coordinated communications, and the Commission will plan to take that up on Friday, April 7th. That's a week from this Friday. We were originally going to take that up this Wednesday, but given the work that had to go into finalizing what we're doing here today, we're going to take up coordination a week from this Friday, April 7th. And we will then be completing the final rulemaking as required by Shays, by the Shays litigation. Mr. Koster, any administrative matters to bring to our contention?
No, Mr. Chairman.
With that, this meeting is adjourned.